Last week, the U.S. Interior Department's Minerals Management Service released its final environmental impact statement for the proposed wind farm in Nantucket Sound. That report says the proposed 130 wind turbines would have no major adverse effect on the environment. Monday, we talked to Cape Wind Associates President Jim Gordon about the FEIS and what it means to the project. Today, we talked to Glenn Whatley, President and CEO of the Alliance to Protect Nantucket Sound, which opposes the project. Glenn, thanks for coming in today.
Good morning, Mindy. Thanks for having me.
Now, this is not the final word. There's still 30 days from that release of the FEIS that they take public comment, and then the Interior Secretary determines whether or not to award a favorable final record of decision, right? So what happens in this 30 days?
That's correct. We are preparing comments on what we see in this final report, and we also see that it's probably going to be more than 30 days because there are many issues that just are not resolved. We've always thought that this report still was released prematurely, and so we're working on that comment as well. There's several reasons why we think that.
And that's my next question to you. You say this is rushed. Explain what areas and why you feel that way.
Well, there's several important factors that we need to consider. First, we don't have the regulations for governing the outer continental shelf for these kind of projects. The regulations were supposed to have been released May of 2006, so they're over 2.5 years old, or 2.5 years
late.
Delayed. Yeah, and when he was leaving, Director Luthy pointed to that as a disappointment. And of course, our organization had always tried to encourage to get the rules out so that we could understand what the standards are. Until those rules are released, we don't see this final decision being made. Plus, we're asking for some comment period on the rules as well. We've seen the draft. We made comments. But the public really needs to understand what the final rules are. So that's probably one of the major issues of why this is rushed.
Okay. And you also say the fact that there's still the FAA is doing a radar?
Yes. Yeah, there's a couple of public safety issues. FAA has come out and said they need to do another study. And I was reading the FEIS just yesterday, the environmental report, and it seems to indicate that the FAA is favorable, which I think's a huge gap. That's just not so. FAA still needs to do some study. That's probably a 3 or 4 month process in itself. So I don't see why we needed to rush this FEIS. I mean, clearly the Bush administration wanted to get it off their desk. Mm-hmm. And there's that term midnight regulations. And this got caught up in that. And we just have the cart in front of the horse on a few of these issues. There's also what's called consultations, 106 consultations on historic preservation. MMS just came out and said there's at least 28 sites that would be adversely impacted. And the next meeting is January 29th. So why would you release the report prior to having the final meetings? And of course, that can't be the final meeting either. They have to have consultations with the two tribes in the region. And the tribes have written letters saying the process hasn't even really begun as far as they're concerned. So there's a lot of factors for why this is rushed. And we agree. I mean, this is dragged on for years and years. But yet there are laws, there are processes, and they should be following those.
So what's the next step for the Alliance?
Well, as I mentioned earlier, Mindy, we are going to be making comments. And we're hoping that the process plays out correctly. I mean, with a new administration, I know the Obama administration has promised change. And the change we'd like to see is let's follow the laws, let's follow the processes. We're confident that if the laws and processes are followed, the gaps and the deficiencies of this project, we've always said it's just in the wrong place. The economics aren't right. There are serious impacts. We disagree with how some of the impacts are rated. We're hopeful the process followed correctly will conclude with this project being moved to another site, such as a deep water site.
We're talking with Glenn Whatley, President and CEO of the Alliance to Protect Nantucket Sound. Our toll-free number is 866-999-4626. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@wgbh.org. Before we go to the phones and questions from listeners, when you say we want to make sure this process is followed correctly, now, if the end outcome, let's say that they did delay this and they followed, and the outcome was still the same, that they said that this project could go forward, Are you going to be satisfied with that answer, or does it go to a lawsuit?
Well, lawsuits are always an option, Mindy, and we'd have to kind of evaluate the risks of taking that step. We see plenty of issues that could be challenged, and so we've always kept that option open, and we're hoping that, we don't have to go there, but
You're prepared to do that.
We are prepared to do that, and we have already been to court over this project.
Right. And so I'm just curious of what kind of grounds would you have, and what kind of court? Would you take this all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court? I mean, do you have grounds to do that?
Well, we're not sure yet, but one other thing that's going on is the Inspector General of the Interior Department is looking into process violations. They're not looking at Cape Wind per se. That's why, you know, they haven't called Cape Wind. They're looking at the Minerals Management Services, how they have been prosecuting this process. Mm-hmm. And that report could be used as the basis for a challenge. Let's say they come up with some conclusions that the process was violated enough, and that would be sufficient ground to take this to court. So that's why, too, we think this FEIS is rushed. Let's wait to see what the Inspector General has to say.
And have you been interviewed by the Inspector General?
Yes, I've been interviewed by the Inspector General. They've been an agent of the Inspector General, not the Inspector General himself.
All right. Let's go to the phones. James is calling from Yarmouth. Hi, James.
Hi. Mr. Watley, the recent federal FEIS was favorable towards Cape Wind, and the report's table E1, which summarized its unfavorable impact on 27 different resources, including, for example, fisheries, birds, visual effect, recreation, and tourism, half the operational impacts were rated negligible, and only 14% were rated higher than minor, and many of those were already committed mitigation to minimize them. On the positive side, Cape Wind will pay major lease and other fees to local communities, the state and federal governments, and provide many health, security, good new jobs, and other favorable impacts to local residents. My question is, how do you justify the Alliance continuing to fight this beneficial project, thus preventing the public from promptly receiving its benefits?
All right, James, thanks. Go ahead.
Yeah, thank you, James, for the questions. And I read the table as well. And I would disagree with some of the impacts, such as commercial fishermen. I was at the workshop that the Coast Guard had, and the Coast Guard pretty much told the commercial fishermen they would not move, the Coast Guard would not move the positions of the turbines. So our commercial fishermen cannot fish Horseshoe Shoal. That's going to be an economic loss to that group that we think is misrepresented in the FEIS. With jobs, yes, there will be some job creation, but those are kind of temporary jobs. The FEIS still has the same economic analysis that the DEIS had, which basically said this project is not economic. The cost is twice what the market will bear. And that's a huge problem, because the only way this project would work would be for above market rates or more subsidy. We have some of the highest rates in the country. We'll lose manufacturing jobs, and that's just not my opinion. That's the opinion of many of the manufacturing companies that are concerned about, we just can't afford these kind of projects.
I just wanted to, since you mentioned the rates, one of the things one of our reporters has done a while ago, she delved into that about what the electricity rates would be. It's such a complicated process to begin with, so trying to figure this out is very difficult. But in her report, she talked to Aaron Baker, a professor of energy policy at UMass Amherst, and I'm just going to quote what she has in her article. He says, because they're a private firm, there is no reason for them to build this if they're not going to make a profit off it. And they won't make a profit off it if they're not going to be able to charge electricity rates that are competitive, you know, given whatever the subsidies are. There's no reason to think that the consumers will be left holding the bag if they make bad investments. They'll be left with their mistakes. I mean, would they, from Cape Wind's perspective, why would they want to build something if they're not going to make a profit off it? And if you can't have competitive rates, you're not going to be able to make a profit.
Right, exactly. And this is complex, and there are a few catch-22s. The report, the environmental report, said Cape Wind needs to get a power purchase agreement to lock in the rates. And They haven't done that. And the new regs, we believe, are going to require that that's done first before we even take a look at these kind of projects. In other words, let's make sure this is economic, not only from a market standpoint, but a subsidy standpoint. So, yes, it's complex. There are some catch-22s.
And we
even though it's, quote-unquote, a competitive market out there, I'm still worried about the subsidies and what that could do to our rates. Fortunately, the Attorney General's office has a new group of consumer advocates, and they'll look at that as well.
And for those interested in checking out Liz White-Saito's stories or any of other Cape Wind coverage or Sean Corcoran's blog, you can check all that out on our website, which is capeandislands.org. I have a question from Pat in Woods Hole, and she says, Friday's report is the latest in a series of studies giving approval to the wind farm and saying that its impact would be nowhere close to what opponents have been claiming. Isn't it time for the opponents to face reality and realize they're on what history will probably say is the wrong side of this issue?
Excellent question. Going back to that summary table, we disagree with how endangered species were treated. When the comment period for the DEIS was in play earlier last year, the Fish and Wildlife Agency wrote a rather critical letter of the DEIS saying the insufficient studies were done. And one would have thought that this project could have been stopped just based on those kind of statements. 6 months later, that same agency had a 180-degree reversal in their opinion, and no studies were done. That's a big red flag. That's something that the Inspector General is looking at as well. So just because this report comes out and it's got lots of favorable comments, we really need to dig in and see what are the underlying factors. And we disagree with how the Coast Guard handled marine safety. They had a big study done on radar interference, and we don't think that study was credible. And we'll follow up on that. So, no, the Alliance is staying in because we see lots of gaps. And we've hired over 40 experts to look at this. So we'll still be contending.
We're talking to Glenn Whatley, president and CEO of the Alliance to Protect Nantucket Sound, which opposes the wind farm project. Our toll-free number is 866-999-4626. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@wgbh.org. John is calling from Falmouth. Hi, John. John, are you there?
Hello.
Hi, John. Yeah, go ahead, John.
Yes, my name is Dr. John Beckerly, and I have a question that has basically, has there been an investigation of the effect of the Cape Wind Farm on possible increase of severe hurricanes striking the Cape and Massachusetts, which would be very disastrous if it were to occur? And I think that this is a really important issue that needs to be studied, and I don't know that it has really been given serious enough study. Does anyone know anything about this?
Glenn, do you know?
Well, Dr. Beckerly, the way you posed the question, I don't know of any studies that were done to suggest the wind farm would attract hurricanes, if that's what the point was. We are concerned that there has been insufficient studies if hurricanes were to hit Nantucket Sound, what the impact would be on these wind turbines. And a good example is what happens in the Gulf of Mexico. Those oil rigs that were supposedly rated to withstand Category 5 hurricanes, some of those get knocked down with Category 2 or Category 3. So it's not a perfect engineering situation, and hurricanes hitting we do have hurricanes here, and if we had 130 turbines down on Horseshoe Shoal blocking shipping lanes, that'd be a big issue, and that's one of the ones that should be further looked at.
Dr. Beckerly, thanks for that phone call and question. We appreciate that. Corrine is calling from Kituit. Hi, Corrine.
Hi, Mindy. Good morning. Glenn, I heard you mention deep water, and I did some research on the internet and found that NREL released a report in 2004 saying that really the wind resource in the entire country is located in deep water, 30 meters and beyond. So I'm certainly someone who's green. I've been green since way before it was popular. I'm for wind power. What is SOS's position on these new technologies? And the last thing is that one of the things that really intrigued me was that you can take deep water technology and bring it back to shore as technology advances. And certainly with what Obama is promising to invest, we should have better technology, you know, next year, the year after, 5 years down and 10 years down the road. Can you address that?
Thanks for the question, Corrine. It's a good one.
Yes, Corrine, thank you. Deep water is the future. There's a company called Blue H that has proposed a deep water project 23 miles south of Martha's Vineyard, and that is a new technology. It's a floating platform, which is the way they do it in oil and gas. And the good news that I see is that that's actually less expensive, a lot less steel. You don't have to pound piles 85 feet into the seabed. And your point about bringing those ashore, yes, you can float them out there, drop anchors, and then if there's maintenance issues, you could always pick up the anchors and bring them back. In the FEIS report, and this is a big issue as far as I can see, they represent that these technologies are 10 to 15 years away, and that's absolutely wrong. Even NREL sees them happening much sooner. Blue H just had a press release. They're producing a commercial wind turbine this year, 2009. So the technology is available. This would be a win-win solution as far as I could see. And just the other day, the governor proposed having 2,000 megawatts of wind turbines. That's a very ambitious goal. You're not going to get that with shallow water technology that's now looking to be obsolete. It's deep water. You can put thousands of those turbines out there. That's what Rhode Island's starting to do. That's what Delaware's starting to do. Be good for Massachusetts. It's also something that Maine's looking at.
Right. Thanks for that question, Corrine. Peter is calling from Yarmouth. Hi, Peter.
Good morning. Morning, Glenn.
Good morning, Peter.
Having read the draft environmental impact statement, I find it interesting that even the government's own five peer review experts, in Appendix F, talking about the economics of the project, say that it's a terrible project. And yet MMS has gone steamrolling ahead to approve this thing. If I were Shell Oil or Gulf or Chevron or any oil or gas exploration company, I would want the same favoritism that Cape Wind has been shown in the permit process, which is to ignore some rules, ignore some cooperating agencies, and just issue the permit because it seems like a good idea. And finally, do you have any idea why, if Cape Wind's economics are so good, they don't have a power purchase agreement yet? Why is the utility industry not lined up at their door to buy their cheap power?
Let me take that last question first. I think that is a red flag, or I think that's a big issue. Because NSTAR and Cape Light Compact, they're already looking for green power. NSTAR certainly has executed agreements with onshore wind farms because the economics do work. And until Cape Wind is able to get that power purchase agreement, we're not going to see, you know, this project moving forward.
Would we know, though, Glenn, if they are in discussions for a power purchase? I mean, that wouldn't be public knowledge if they were starting some sort of negotiation or talking about that, right?
Well, you know, Cape Wind likes to have it both ways. On the one hand, they like to say we're doing secretive stuff, but that's a huge issue. If they had an agreement, I'm sure we'd see that as front page
news. If they had agreement, but if they're in some sort of negotiating stage at this point, we may not know about that.
Well, that's correct. Yeah. We may not know, although it's supposed to be a big secret that Cape Light Compact's been negotiating with them, yet everybody's talking about that. And
okay. We have another email question. Has Cape Wind responded to suggestions of an alternate location?
No, we haven't heard from Cape Wind. During the Coast Guard workshop, the president of Clean Power Now, Rick Elric, made a comment that one way to mitigate the safety issues would be to look at other locations. And then when I asked him about that, he said he hadn't done a detailed study, but that comes up from time to time.
Yeah. Barbara on Nantucket writes, underwater noise is a major issue that has been minimally addressed, only looking at the noise output from each turbine, and in the terms of human hearing capacity, most people are unaware that marine species are very sound sensitive and completely dependent on sound for their survival. Human-made underwater noise has proven to be deadly to some marine species. Does the FEIS address the collective underwater noise output from the 25-square-mile power plant?
That's a good question. We think that's deficient. If you look at what Fish and Wildlife has done, they just looked at avian impacts. Their biological opinion did not get into species that were in the water, or at least not adequately. So another example of everybody saying, well, this is a favorable report, but yet when you really dig into issues such as this one, you can see serious deficiencies.
All right, let's talk to Richard, who's calling from Vineyard Haven. Hi, Richard.
Hi. Hello, Glenn.
Good morning, Richard.
I just wanted to talk about the issue of fishermen. You stated that the fishermen would lose some of their livelihood.
Yes.
And isn't it true that if you set aside an area and you have stationary platforms that in the long run, that would actually enhance the fish population?
Richard, that could be true. But that's not the issue. The issue is the distance between the wind turbines. The commercial fishermen that use mobile gear would not be able to maneuver adequately on Horseshoe Shoal. It would actually be a safety issue. So the issue is not whether the turbines would attract more species. It's more the commercial fishermen just can't fish there. And we're essentially told, you know, go elsewhere.
So they can't fish there, so then that would be more of a sanctuary for the fish, wouldn't it?
Yes, but we're talking about economic impact. And
but the long-term economic impact of the fisheries is it's going down because of overfishing. So I don't see how this would affect, in the long run, the fisheries.
Well, that's an interesting point. Back to the fishermen will have to go elsewhere. They'll have to spend, you know, more fuel to get to other places. And if we have more fish on Horseshoe Shoal and you can't get in there to fish, it doesn't make a lot of sense to me that that's necessarily a benefit.
Richard, thanks for the question. Appreciate your time. Let's go to Suzanne, who's calling from Marston's Mills. Hi, Suzanne.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
I had a couple of quick questions.
Sure.
First of all, simply because of the economy, what is the impact going to be on our electric bills on Cape Cod?
We did a study, Suzanne. And the average bill in Cape Cod is about $100 a month. And if you believe that 75% of our electricity will come from just strictly Cape Wind, and you look at all the cost and the prices that they would need to be economically viable, we estimate maybe another $30 to $35 a month. So it would increase our bills about 30% with all those assumptions.
Thanks for the question, Suzanne. We have Bonnie from Dennis who writes, is it true that the lifespan of a wind farm is 25 to 30 years? Who will monitor or maintain this operation, and are there any standards in place for this?
That's a good question. Actually, the assumption is 20 years, not more than 20. And I was at a conference not too long ago where they were saying, some of the operators of wind farms are saying, right now, they're worried that turbines will need overhaul in 6 or 7 years, major overhaul. So we haven't had wind turbines around long enough to know if they'll indeed last 20 years. The data so far suggests that they'll actually last less. And that's a big issue with regard to these new regulations. We're hoping the new regulations require bonding, specific bonding, to make sure that the public doesn't get stuck with having to do the repairs if the project goes bankrupt.
Let me ask you about Senator Kennedy. He's been obviously an outspoken critic of the wind farm. Have you been in contact with him since the FEIS has come out? Has he made any statements to the alliance?
No. We haven't had any contact with the senator. I saw his press release, and I think he made a couple of excellent points, especially about the Inspector General's report. And about a year ago, Senator Kennedy was interviewed by the Cape Cod Times, and he also made a strong point that we need the rules first. Let's not get the cart in front of the horse. So You know, whether or not the senator is for or against the project, he has been a big advocate of making sure that we follow the right laws, follow the right processes.
Right. In that statement that he wrote, released after the FEIS was released, he said he did not believe that the favorable review of Cape Wind will stand. What do you expect his next move will be? We talked about the alliance. Do you have any idea what his move, what his next move would be?
No, not really. I do know that he is pretty consistent with his request that we follow the processes and follow the laws. If I had a chance to make a request, I would just ask the senator to continue pushing for follow the laws. Let's follow the processes.
I have another email question. It says, how can the Coast Guard or the FAA arrive at any conclusions about radar impacts without an exact specification on the turbines? How many, how tall, what capacity in megawatts, and therefore what electromagnetic weight?
Well, that's an interesting point. In the study that was done, they did use the GE 3.6 turbine. That's to us is controversial because GE is not selling that turbine. The study made the point that the profile of the nacelle, the body of the turbine, had lots of sharp corners, which would help to see the turbines in radar. If we don't use that turbine, if Cape Wind didn't use that turbine, the other substitutes could be smoother on the edges, which would invalidate that study. So it's a very critical thing to make sure we know which turbine before we do all these studies, because we need the specific impacts if we have serious issues such as marine safety.
Mm-hmm. I want to ask you about media on this whole issue. When you look at media off Cape nationally, the opposition has been depicted as NIMBYs. How do you respond to that?
That's right. We are a bunch of, you know, NIMBYs just worried about our backyard. And what we try to do is just go back to these basic issues that we've been talking about today on the radio. There's economic impacts that are adverse. There are still plenty of environmental impacts that are adverse. And it's more than just the view. And to be candid, the view is part of it. But that's maybe 10% of what the issues are versus some of these serious ones that we have been talking about.
All right. You can find all of our coverage on this issue, as well as, I mentioned, Sean Corcoran's blog at our website, capeandislands.org. Glenn Whatley, President and CEO of the Alliance to Protect Nantucket Sound, thank you for coming in. And I'm sure
thank
we'll have
much,
conversations
Mindy.
Still to come. I'm Mindy Todd. Thanks for listening.
Is hosted and produced by Mindy Todd. The executive producer is Steve Young. Production assistance from Dan Treidle and Jenny Jenker. Theme music by Benjamin Verdery and William Coulter. The Point is a production of the Cape and Islands NPR stations, a service of WGBH Radio.